Someone asked me, was I going to be down to earth? I am down to earth, but I will be asking you to think along with me and feel along with me about some very fundamental questions which have been opened by other speakers. Thinking and feeling must come together here because the way we think about ourselves, in particular, the assumptions that we have about ourselves as gendered beings, have everything to do with the fulfillment of our individual lives. Moreover, these assumptions, when they go unrecognized and unquestioned, can skew the shape and limit the depth of our relationships with one another. So I'm asking, who do we think we are? What do we know? How free are we to express of love and of power? And who is the necessary other? Monotheistic religions speak of a necessary other. Communion with divine otherness is an ultimate goal of religious practice. The divinity of our faith, the ultimate target of the longing that we feel for completion, salvation, home. We know this other, if we are religious, as the source of our being, the guide to our spiritual growth, the end of our life's journey. We may call this other, if we are Jungians, the self. But there are other tales of a necessary other. You may have heard the old Greek story of the first humans. They were complete, in fact, shaped like circles or globes. And the gods decided to punish some threat to themselves that they felt from such human completeness. So they divided these original humans into two halves, male and female. And ever after, each of us must be constantly searching for our other half, far too busy to trouble the gods. Seeking the male or female other who will complement our incompleteness and make us whole. Now, I'm not sure how you feel about this story, but there's no doubt it's a theme that underlies much of our feeling about male-female relationships and much of our psychological theorizing. These two visions of a necessary other, which we might call the religious and the romantic, come together in Jungian theory in the image of the self as androgynous and of the necessity on the path of individuation to discover and form a relationship with that contrasexual other within, the anima or the animus. In Jungian thought, the anima and animus appear in a dual role. We recognize them in dreams and in our projections, negatively as threats or positively as guides, luring us, driving us, supporting us, as we are drawn toward the deeper reality of the self. Less consciously, perhaps, we may also feel the contrasexual other as the goal, the other half of our wholeness, the prize who awaits us at the end of our fairy tale journey. Let's look at this second romantic vision of the other a little further. Because they constitute the most fundamental division of humanity into kinds, the two sexes have served as convenient images for every sort of two-ness, every polarity we conceive or encounter, including body and mind, heaven and earth, down and up, light and dark, good and bad. We have a tendency to sort all human capacities into the two great categories, and this is only slightly more sophisticated, I think, when the categories are named masculine and feminine rather than male and female. That is, we tend, more or less unconsciously, to assume, for instance, that if it is masculine to be logical or assertive or creative, it cannot be feminine. And if it is feminine to be nurturing or gentle or unassuming, it certainly can't be masculine. We reify our gender categories and, like good Aristotelians, treat them as mutually exclusive. And we have a certain anxiety about displaying ourselves and encouraging our children to display the qualities appropriate to our sex and gender. We feel required to prove our gender by performance rather than to discover its authentic archetypal range. And what is inappropriate to this performance is left not only to shadow, but also to anima animus. In these circumstances, it's no wonder that we've come to imagine the self as androgynous and to feel that the contrasexual other, the anima animus within, or the mate we seek in the outer world, is the necessary other, making possible the experience of wholeness to which we're so deeply drawn. But note, Plato's image, the image of androgynous wholeness, supposes two equal halves. The king and the queen, in alchemical imagery, are equal in value, equal in power, equal in authority. But the actuality in contemporary personal psychology and in our culture is otherwise. In fact, we do not ordinarily experience the equality, I don't mean sameness, which would result in true conjunctio, true meeting. We have rather only the possibility of unbalanced conjunctio. That's James Hillman's term.